Hello, Internet. Right now, I am uploading a video to my YouTube channel. This is the one about the sneaky plan for the Electoral College. Now, as part of making my videos, I often make spreadsheets. So here is the spreadsheet that I made while working on the video. And while I'm waiting for that video to upload, I thought, why don't I just talk you through this thing a little bit? This isn't a tight explanation or anything. This is just going to be a scroll down spreadsheet lane with Gray as I tell you about some of the things that I did while making the video. Okay, so for this video going up, I originally wanted to have something about apportionment and the Electoral College. Every state gets a certain number of votes, right? Delaware has 3, Georgia has 16, Hawaii has 4. What are the exact details of how this happens? Now, that part of the video got cut, and I was originally thinking it was going to become its own little thing, and then that didn't end up going anywhere for reasons that might become obvious as we talk through a bunch of this stuff. But so let's begin at the beginning. Here we have all of the states, their current estimated populations, the flag of each of these states, very important to have, of course. The Electoral College votes that they get. And then the thing that drives many people to madness is how many people per Electoral College vote. So this column down here represents how many people does it take in the state to get one Electoral College vote. So in Hawaii, for every 355,000 people, there are 4 Electoral College votes. But if you go to Arizona, oh, there's the formula. Right, it takes 650,000 people per electoral college vote. And you get that number by just dividing the population by the electoral college votes. They're colorized here because I've divided them up into quintiles, 5 groups. So you can see like most proportionate and least proportionate. And we can sort that column now. So here we are in who is least represented to most represented as far as electoral college votes are considered. Now, what's interesting here is Texas is currently the top contender for most unrepresented by electoral college votes. And California, which was the winner of this dubious distinction, is currently in third place. Florida is in second. And if we go down to the bottom here, whoops, we can see the usual Wyoming is the most represented. It only takes 192,000 people to get one electoral college vote in Wyoming. You can think of this as if you are running for office, you need a majority of the electoral college votes. As you go further down this line, you need to convince fewer people in the state to vote for you to get an electoral college vote. And if you're in the top here, you need to convince a larger number of voters to vote for you to get a proportionally smaller number of votes. So that's how the system works. Okay, so the question though is, how does this number get determined exactly? Well, the number of electoral college votes is dependent on the number of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. All right, so the U.S. House of Representatives has 435 seats. So this 435 is going to be distributed among the 50 states, roughly in proportion with the population. So if we take the population, put everyone in population order, you can see that roughly speaking, as we go down the population, you can see that the number of House seats is proportional-ish to that number. So the more people, the more House seats you get. The Electoral College votes is just the House seats plus 2. So that's a very easy calculation to do. Now, you notice when I sort by the population over here, the current population of each state, the current population per electoral college vote, it doesn't stay in those nice quintiles anymore. It's gotten a little broken up. Why is that? Well, it's because the House seat number depends on not what is the current population, but what was the population at the last census. So here we have now what was the population at the last census and what's the current population. Now this is a little hard to look at. So we can add in this column which shows us the population growth, or in some cases, like with Illinois, the population decline of a state. And so if we sort by this to sort descending, so we can see that Texas and Utah have grown quite a lot since the last census, and Vermont, West Virginia, and Illinois have all shrunk a little since the last census. So the longer it goes between censuses, the less the current state of the House seats represents the current population, which then, of course, since the Electoral College is just this number plus two, means the Electoral College also gets a little bit whacked. So right now, Texas is at the shortest end of the stick here with having had a big population growth that isn't reflected in an increase in House seats. Illinois, Vermont, and West Virginia maybe should have fewer seats. Well, not Vermont, because they only have one, and one is the minimum number you can have. But Illinois and West Virginia might lose seats the next time around because their population has shrunk. Now, again, it's just useful to keep in mind that if someone gains a seat like Texas, it has to come from somewhere else, because this 435 number is kept the same. Congress passed a law saying there are not going to be any more seats than that, so the seat numbers just have to get readjusted every census. So then that's the big question. How does that happen? How are these numbers exactly determined? Well, this led me down a little bit of a rabbit hole. Okay, so the start of the process is that each state gets one seat in the House. So let's fill that down. So this is the way things look at the beginning. Everybody starts with one, no matter how large or how small your state. Now again, this process is based on the census population, not what the current population is. So let's sort by census population. So nextly, let's unhide this column. So here we have the census population per representative for calculation. So this is thinking about the census population divided by the number of House seats. That's what this formula is showing us here. So these numbers start out obviously hilarious. That's California gets one seat in the House and three Electoral College votes for 37 million people. And then at the bottom, Wyoming has one House seat, three Electoral College votes for 568,000 people. So part of what happened in the process of making this video is I had originally thought the method for apportioning the House seats was by taking this number, population per representative, see who is the worst off, and you give them a representative, which then drops them low, sort of resort by descending, see who's worst off, and do that again. Give them a seat, sort again. You know, now it's New York's turn to now sort again by descending and just keep going, adding seats, always giving one seat to whoever has the worst representation based on this column, and do that until you run out of House seats. But it turns out that is not the method by which the seats are apportioned. That's sort of the idea behind it, but the details ended up, as they almost always are, being much more complicated and much more inscrutable. So let's reset these couple numbers and talk about what actually happened, which is partly why there's no video about seat apportionment. Here we are on the Wikipedia page for the United States House of Representatives, and we can go to this section on apportionment. Okay, there's a little summary of it, but let's forget that. We can go to the actual page on congressional reapportionment. So it turns out there's a bunch of different methods that have been used over time. Okay, so blah, 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 blah. We get down to here. So what is the actual apportionment method? So it turns out it's this thing called the Huntington Hill method is what's currently used. So if we go on to the more detailed page, there's this description down here which runs through the math of how it works. Now this is talking about the general Huntington Hill method, but I wanted to know the exact details for the U.S. State House of Representatives. So if we go to the actual Census Bureau who does this work, they have a walkthrough of how the process works. But as I often find looking through things, I come across these things that I think of as explanations without explanation. Like it tells you how a thing is done, but it doesn't really give you a why. Or it always feels like it's missing some key part. So by digging around for a while, I eventually found what I guess is the first paper. So this is Edward Huntington of the Huntington Method. Okay, so he says that the problem is basically that it's really difficult to give out the seats equally. that in theory, what you would want to do is just take the whole population of the United States, divide by 435, and that's what you should have as how many people have each representative. But the states have different populations, and it's like, so you just end up with this more complicated thing. You don't end up with even numbers. And I like this line here of, this problem has been a subject of violent debate in Congress for the past 100 years. Okay, so I'm just going to point out this part here. So none of these methods, however, possess any satisfactory mathematical justification. So he's saying that the methods that are used are just sort of arbitrary, that someone proposes them, but they don't have a great mathematical justification. So he has this method that he's created, and I love this at the end. This method may be called the method of geometric mean, since the multipliers are reciprocals of the geometric means of consecutive integers. The solution of the problem is thus complete. But what I sort of love is that nowhere in this paper, at least to my reading, do I feel like he addresses this part, that none of the previous methods have any satisfactory mathematical justification. And he talks through this method that is used and the principles that he is going for, but I'm sort of not sold on why this is the best method compared to all the previous methods. But anyway, I spent a long time sort of working through this and found it not easy to follow. So I gave up on this paper because I found that later, this guy who works for the Census Department wrote up this much longer description of how does the Huntington Hill method actually work. So this thing is a little bit easier to understand, and I think this was written for Congress or for the Census Department itself in order to be able to understand what's going on in this paper. So let's talk about this just a little bit. So here he provides the actual answer to the thing that was missing from the previous paper, which is why this method? So by the method of equal proportions, which is the Huntington Hill method, the difference between the representation of any two states is smallest possible when measured by the relative difference in the average population per district and also by the relative difference in the individual share in a representative. These features appear to make it superior to any other method that has been devised. So the way I interpret this is that, going back to my spreadsheet, it's not just a question about take the state that has the worst representative, add a House seat, and make it a little better. It's a question of, if you're going to add a seat, you have to consider all of the states together. And the question is more like, if you're going to add a seat somewhere, where is the strategic place to add it that will bring, on average, all of these numbers closer together? And adding a seat to the state that has the worst representative per population doesn't always achieve that goal, because California ends up with something like, I don't know, I think it's 50 or something. Yeah, let's say, maybe it's 53. 53. Yeah, there we go. So California is going to end up with 53 seats. We'll just sort of cheat this, and now let's sort by descending. So obviously I haven't given everybody else the seats, but like, so California has 53 and it ends up with 704,000 people per vote. But there's a big difference then between adding one more representative to California, which doesn't change its average votes per person very much, and say adding one vote to North Dakota, which drops it in half. So the way I interpret what this paper is saying here is that it's trying to account for this effect, that adding an additional vote to a state that has a lot of votes already affects the population per representative less than adding it to a state that has very few. That's a thing to consider under this method. Back to the paper. Okay, so here's where we start to walk through the math. We say that there are two states, A and B. We need to give a representative to one of them. Who should it be? The basic idea is that whoever you give the additional representative to, it shouldn't make the difference between the two states bigger. You want the differences to be smaller. And that should be true for every single state that happens. Now, if you're interested, there's a little math proof that you can follow in the paper, which then gets around to this idea of the geometric mean, skipping, skipping, skipping. And so at the end, you get this formula, which just says, give the next representative to whichever state makes the difference between them smaller, which makes sense. Now what the congressional method is doing is a little bit more understandable. It's taking the formula here to calculate out who should get the next seat assignment. So in the spreadsheet, I added a column that replicates this formula, taking the current population, dividing by this geometric mean, and that gives us this Q number, which says, what is the order right now that each of the states should get an additional House seat? But here's the thing. I'm going to level with you at this point. I can follow this, but I can't say that I truly understand why it works. And this calculation of the priority number and this Q number is a little bit taken on faith. Now, helpfully, the census makes all of their data available. And so here is a spreadsheet I downloaded from the census where they show you their calculation for the priority value, and I could check it against my own calculation for the priority value and know, like, okay, I'm doing this right, but I don't really understand why or how it works. But at least like my homework has been checked against the census's official calculations, and I know that I've gotten the right number. So I was thinking about this for a while and trying to come up with a way to better understand how is this working. Like, I can crank through the numbers and say, okay, we add one seat to California and then one seat to Texas, and then it's California's turn again, and then it's New York's turn, and then it's Florida's turn, right? And the Q number keeps changing. Oh, let me pull this up here. I made a little table to show seats left and seats to allocate. And I tested this all the way to the end, and it will get you the correct answer. But then I thought, okay, can I make this work in such a way so that I have a better understanding of what's going on? So let's show you now everything else that's in this spreadsheet. So there's a lot more that's going on behind the scenes. It's probably time to make this full screen. Boop. All right, here what we now have is a calculation for all of the states versus all of the others, whether adding an additional representative to that state right now will bring the overall average distance between all of the states closer together. So we can see here's California. So this column is California versus. So it's California versus Texas. If we add one representative to California, what is the difference in percentages look like? It looks like 35%. If instead we added that representative to Texas, what does the difference look like? It's 196%. So if you're going to have to right now add the first House seat to California or Texas, you want to add it to California because it brings the difference in representation between the two closer together. And so you go down again and say, okay, California versus New York. Adding one representative to California makes the difference between them 4%. Adding one representative to New York versus California makes the difference between them 285%. And we get really hilarious numbers down here at the bottom, which is add one representative to California versus Wyoming. The difference between them is 97%. Add the representative to Wyoming versus California, and the difference is 13,000%. So what the paper before was saying is that you should add a representative to the state that wins this comparison versus every other state at any time. And so right now, while everything is really nicely sorted, we can just look. I made the cell turn green for when that's the case. And just by scrolling down, you can see that California wins every single comparison for where the first vote should go. Texas, so that's 49 wins. Texas has 48 wins. New York won less. And it makes this really nice little line as we're going down. So this number, this column, the Q, shows what does the congressional formula say should be the next state to get a seat. And this wins is my manual calculation in this really ugly way of let's just check. Let's not trust the math proof. Let's actually check each of the calculations individually and then tally up how many wins that has. So we can start cranking through the spreadsheet now and see what happens. And this is the idea of like playing with a thing to see how it works. So adding a seat to California gives us 348 left. Now you can see that the number of wins have changed, that the next state we should add a seat to is Texas, because now Texas has one more win than California does in terms of bringing all the states closer. And here we can see that the congressional calculation method matches the state with the largest number of wins, 49. So do it again, and now we're back to California as the state that wins the most. So what we can keep doing now with this spreadsheet is adding one at a time additional representatives for each of the states. And as we do that, right, we can see that the wins calculated change and the census population per representative changes along with the current population per electoral college vote and all the rest of that. So now I'm just going to resort so everybody's in queue order here. So I've just added a bunch of seats. We're going to allocate seat 17. There's 369 seats left. And so now at this point, we can just sort of crank through the spreadsheet and see what it does. Like see how the apportionment changes the representation in each of the states. Now, as you might imagine, this took a little while to get to work right and to figure out and to play around with. So much so that what I'm doing right now as I go through each of these little additions is I ended up building a keyboard maestro macro shortcut to automatically search for the queue number at the top and then to add in an additional house seat so that I don't have to type it each time. I'm just going to keep adding seats one by one. I'm showing you this because if it wasn't obvious already, I'm a big fan of spreadsheets, and I really think that spreadsheets are the like a bicycle for the mind, as the saying goes, where they can really help you figure something out. They can really help you think about something. And in the process of having to make the spreadsheet, I feel like I got to understand the apportionment method much better, but I didn't have an intuitive sense for how this works. But by playing around with it and adding seats one at a time and then going through and checking what do the wins look like, I got a much better sense of why this method could be described as a mathematically good method. I don't think it's very explainable, which is why it didn't really end up as a fun 5-minute video. But it does have some internal sense as to why you should use this over just giving a representative to the most disproportionately represented state at any particular time. So just stopped here at a random point. So we're going to give out the 57th seat, which goes to South Carolina. And again, if we zoom over, here we go, South Carolina on the list. Again, we can see that in all of the matchups, South Carolina brings the overall difference between all of the states closer together. I also like having done this calculation, you can kind of see where things are going in the future, that Louisiana and Kentucky are gaining a bunch, right? So is Virginia. But so right now, South Carolina gets the next seat. And we can just keep on cranking through. Now, I am actually going to sit here and crank through the full iteration, the full distribution of all of the seats. You don't have to sit here for this whole thing, but I'm going to do it. And but if you want to play around with this spreadsheet, I'm also going to make a copy of it available on my blog. So there should be a link in the description or at the end of the video that you can click to go get that. So let's just finish this off with a little relaxing spreadsheet calculations. Might make a few comments as we go along. So I'm just going to resort every time California gets back on top, because I think that helps visually set up the idea of what's happening, that as we keep adding seats to the houses, or that as we keep adding seats to each of the states, it changes the relative it changes the relationship between all of them, so that you can kind of imagine that they're all standing in order, that they're all standing in line to get their seat, but that as each of them gets a seat, it affects the order of the line itself. But it's just kind of a pain to resort every single time I've added a House seat. So I'm just going to do it every time we get to California, since California is the most frequent. So there we go again. All right, we got Mississippi gets their first seat at 105, and so does Arkansas at 106. And then regular Kansas at 109. All right. California sort. There we go. Beautiful, beautiful Utah at 117. Nevada, home of Las Vegas, 119. And California sort. You'll also notice that as we go through this, the quintile positions for census population per representative for the calculation change, along as the quintile values for the population per electoral college vote currently. And again, obviously sometimes those changes are quite large when a small state gets one additional vote versus when a state that has a lot of representatives already gets an additional vote. But at the end, the order is going to be like not exactly the same, but sort of roughly the same. Oh, here we go. New Mexico with the first at 168. Such a good flag, New Mexico. Okay. California sort. Okay, here we go. I find this. Okay, Idaho at seat 132 gets their first and only additional representative. So now that we're getting down into about the last third of the House seats to distribute, that's going to start happening more and more, where a state just edges it in at some point in the line to be able to get an additional seat that they happen to be the optimal one that reduces the overall disparity. I don't know why I find that sort of fun and interesting. It's like the smaller population states, I feel like I'm really rooting for them when they get their one additional representative. Okay, California sort. Oh, there we go. Hawaii gets her additional one. And that's the only, and that's her final one. I think that's the same for Maine. Yep, same for Maine. Same for New Hampshire. Okay, we're really getting down to the wire. Less than 100 seats left. All right, Iowa's got their final representative. All right, Oregon. Mississippi, they're set. They're not going to be getting any more. By the way, that's not part of the calculation that they don't get any more. This is mainly just, I have a little formula in the spreadsheet that's comparing the calculated number versus what I know is the final number and simply making the House seats bold once those two match. And by continuing to crank through the spreadsheet, the number just never goes up because we run out of seats. So that's not a predetermined thing. It's just a little indication to me of when it's going to happen. Like right now, with Arkansas getting their four House seats, their six Electoral College votes, and it's bold. That's the final one they're going to get. And ditto New Mexico. And Oklahoma, three in a row, hat trick. Louisiana. Kansas. Missouri, oop, just 50 left. Utah gets her final seat. Same for Kentucky. Nevada. Colorado. Maryland at 8. Massachusetts at 9. New Jersey for 12, Virginia 11, Indiana 9, North Carolina 13, four in a row, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Arizona. Sort. Tennessee, Nebraska, Ohio, Rhode Island, Alabama. Everybody's getting their final seats, just 14 left. Illinois, Michigan, New York, under 10 now, Pennsylvania, oops, that was my macro going a little crazy at the last second, got a bit excited, hit the wrong keystroke there. Okay, I believe this is finally California's last one at 8. Nope, I was wrong, they're 53. Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, Washington, Texas. That's right. California's second to last. California, and the final seat goes to Minnesota. And we can see here that if there was one more seat, my adoptive state of North Carolina would be the one to get it. But okay, that is the spreadsheet. We can sort by the House seats, or actually let's sort by current population per Electoral College vote. But so there we go. This brings us back to the very beginning, where I showed you the decreasing order, the quintile breakdown of the states based on the seat apportionment. And now we've walked through the whole thing together. So thank you for watching. And like I said, the spreadsheet, if you want to play around with it yourself, is going to be available by link to my blog. And I hope you enjoy the video that I made this whole spreadsheet for and never ended up using in the actual video itself.